Minnesota Reads is produced at KUMD with funding provided in part by the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund. This morning, we are pleased to welcome Mary Krugerud to our airwaves this morning as our guest on Minnesota Reads. She is the author of a book called The Girl in Building C, The True Story of a Teenage Tuberculosis Patient. Hey, Mary, good morning, and thanks so much for joining us.
Good morning, and thank you for having me on your program.
Now, you've written a couple of other books on this subject. One is called Interrupted Lives, The History of Tuberculosis in Minnesota and Glen Lake Sanatorium. And you also, or sanitarium, no, it is sanatorium or sanitarium? Okay.
It is sanatorium.
All right. So we get the word right, because words matter. You also have a page on Duluth's Nopaming Tuberculosis Sanitarium, and I'll make sure that the link to that is included. Folks will perhaps enjoy taking a look at that. What's your connection to this topic? Of course, that's the first question that I think it sort of begs.
Well, no one in my family, as far as I know, ever had tuberculosis. But in 1984, I accepted a job at the what was then Oak Terrace State Nursing Home in Minnetonka, and that whole campus had formerly been the Glen Lake TB Sanatorium. So I just got interested in its history, met people who were former employees and former patients, and when that place closed in 1990, a group of us decided to have a 75th anniversary to celebrate the history of both institutions, and that brought out a flood of memories from people. And one of the other people in our group, Norma Anderson, collected some interviews, and she talked about writing a book. And I just kind of kept learning more about tuberculosis. For some reason, the subject fascinated me because it was the leading cause of death for many years, and yet someone growing up in my generation really didn't hear much about it. There was such a stigma that people didn't talk about it. So I was fascinated to learn how much of an industry there was surrounding tuberculosis and sanatoriums and the medical research. So I just kept gathering information, and finally I went to Norma and said, are you going to write a book on this? And she said, no, why don't you?
And you said, as a matter of fact, I will. And may I borrow your interviews?
Yeah. So I used her interviews. She was really helpful with that. She gave me the rights to her. She had a self-published book, with McKinkles or something, and that she distributed, and she gave me rights to that. So I was able to use those in addition to getting a hold of a lot of other people and using their interviews. It's really a history of that sanatorium, but it covers, early Minnesota history of tuberculosis and consumption, and goes right up to 1976 when Glen Lake was the last sanatorium to close in Minnesota. So it's and there are a lot of human interest stories in there. So it's not a dry history of a sanatorium. I think it's interesting because of the human stories I was able to weave in while talking about the treatment.
When I was a kid, I read a biography of Annie Sullivan, Helen Keller's teacher, and her early years. And she ended up in a poorhouse at the time. They had such things, a poorhouse in the late part of the 1800s. And her brother died of tuberculosis. And there's an account in that story which is absolutely terrifying. They had the children separated, and then she wasn't allowed to visit him, in part because he was ill and in part because he was on the boy's side. And she snuck over to that side and found him dead, wheeled into another room and with a sheet over his body. And, now we don't react to the idea of tuberculosis, not because of stigma, but because the disease has almost been eradicated and we're not familiar with it anymore. Can you tell us just briefly what tuberculosis is, was, and why it took such a terrible toll on people, in earlier, not that many decades ago, I guess?
Well, TB is considered an epidemic, but it has a really long arc that can encompass 100 years rather than most epidemics like diphtheria, which kind of sweep through and are gone. And so the thing about tuberculosis in the United States is that it really coincided with immigration and the living quarters, usually, or living conditions of early immigrants is usually crowded, lending to contagious diseases spreading. It also coincided then in the 20s with the start of the Great Depression when people weren't eating as well, and TB is an opportunistic disease. So that's why that era of the early 1900s, it was the leading cause of death. And there were other things that came together to work on that epidemic, in addition to the fact that in the United States it was just kind of phasing out. Part of that was we started pasteurizing milk because we can get tuberculosis, bovine TB, and Minnesota was in the lead of actually destroying tuberculosis herds and compensating farmers for the destruction of their herds in order to stop the spread of TB. The other thing was more testing, the MANTO test, which if you're old enough, you remember having them in school.
Yeah.
And then the sanatoriums. We had more sanatoriums per capita than any other state. So TB has a real steep decline in Minnesota in the 1920s and through the 30s. And those three things kind of work together on that. That's not true of the rest of the world. It is still the leading contagious killer in the rest of the world. So a lot of people will say, why are we worried about TB? Well, we're not here because in the United States it was pretty well conquered after streptomycin came out. And back in those days, drug companies were eager. I hate to criticize drug companies, but they were eager in those days. Once they realized that streptomycin was part of the cure, they did everything they could to bring that to the market and bring it out cheap so that people could get a prescription from their doctors and start taking it.
Well,
that didn't happen in the rest of the world.
And in a sense, too, I mean, far from being a criticism of drug companies, that was a way that drug companies perhaps, drug companies don't really act that way now.
No.
They don't say, hey, let's, you know, we can cure this. Let's make it cheap and make sure everybody has it. That's really not the business model always.
No, that has changed, unfortunately, but that's the way it was in those days. And Glen Lake, interestingly enough, had a connection with the Mayo Clinic. And so they were doing drug tests on people. Again, I think most regulations would prohibit it nowadays because you have to go through so much paperwork. But they just went in and said, you know, who wants to volunteer for taking this drug to see if it works? And you know, a lot of people were near death and, you know, well, sure, why not take a chance? And so actually, once they started into the drug development, it moved pretty quickly because they were not testing it so much on the animal, the guinea pig. They were testing it on human guinea pigs. There are a lot of arguments you can give either way for the ethics of what was done in those years, but you know, people wanted to live. It's a, you know, human nature. You want to stay alive.
Well,
but in the rest of the world, this is really still a very serious problem.
It would have been a terrifying thing to see a disease sweeping, you know, and of course people are familiar with influenza and with some other epidemics that have broken out within our lifetime or the lifetime of people we know, and have a disease coming through. A lot of people, of course, remember polio, the polio scares, mm-hmm. and have a disease sweeping through that could hurt or kill you. And you, of course, you want to take care of your kids, if nothing else. You, like you say,
right.
You want to live. Do we
right.
have a vaccine? Are we vaccinated against? I should know this. I don't. Are we vaccinated against TB now, or is it a situation where, if heaven forbid somebody's got it, they're given medicine to cure it?
We don't. There is a vaccine. It's not terribly effective. I can't say authority but wise, but it's like 50%. It's not really, you know, up there with other vaccinations. And the trouble is, it turns a person positive. And right now, the very cheapest way and easiest way for someone to test for a tuberculosis presence is a MANTO test, which is just basically the injection of a dead TB antigen under your skin, and within 3 days, if you've got a red bump, they know you've been exposed to TB. Cheap, expensive, but if you turn positive for TB because of a vaccination, you have to go straight to more expensive diagnostic procedures. And so for now, with the vaccine not being 100% or even 90% effective, most countries prefer to not use the vaccine.
And so we don't have tuberculosis in this country, a sweep of tuberculosis in this country, because why?
Because we're healthy.
Okay.
That's basically it. It is an opportunistic disease. And in fact, the percentage of people who have been exposed to TB and have recovered from it thinking they only had a cold is probably higher than we think it is.
Wow.
But we don't routinely do MANTO tests anymore in school, so we really have no idea exactly what that figure is.
Wow.
But
that's amazing.
TB spreads most easily in families and in small, close quarters. So if you go back, way back, like in the early 1900s, it's interesting to see that there are a lot of deaths from TB at Yale. It's dormitories.
Sure.
Dormitories, fraternities, things like that. And also, you get into the immigrant tenements, it would sweep through. And then just generally in families. That's why, and I'm going to segue here, that's why Marilyn's story in The Girl in Building C is unusual, because no one that she had regular contact with tested positive for tuberculosis. So she was one of those rare people who actually caught it from someone she did not know well. She shared a room at a church conference in Minneapolis in a hotel. And in those days, you know, kids slept in double beds together. It's not like nowadays where everybody has to have their own bed in their own room.
Right.
So she shared a bed with a girl who had a horrible cough. And that was never followed up on. They didn't do a lot of the epidemiology work in those days to find out, you know, source. But her assumption is that girl had tuberculosis and that's where she got it. So that's kind of rare. I mean, there's not a big chance of just catching tuberculosis from someone who is on the bus with you.
Well, it's such a fascinating story of how we're afraid of things that we don't know and we don't understand, and how that fear and segregating a population then adds a stigma to it. You know, now, I mean, of course, the people have two different ideas about how you ought to behave when you have a cold, whether you should come to work and suck it up and do your job, or whether you should go home and not make everybody else sick. But it's not as though somebody has a cold and you're, you know, sent to outer Siberia until your cold goes away, for example.
Right.
And the way that stigma can build from fear. And then, of course, that, you know, the whole idea of medical testing, so that, you know, that ethical thing is brought in there. And, you know, this worked out really, really well. Should we be doing something more like that? There's just so many fascinating questions and threads that you can follow in this narrative. It's really very fascinating. Mary, thank you so much for joining us this morning. I'm sorry we're out of time, but I will get a couple of links set up so that folks can obviously find links to your previous books, and again, to go and take a look at your page about the Nopamine Sanatorium.
Yes. Yeah, there's a whole interesting story there, too. It's a very fascinating place.
Mary, again, thank you so very much for being our guest this morning on the program.
Oh, you're welcome.
Mary Krugerud, joined us this morning. She is our guest of a fascinating book called The Girl in Building C, The True Story of a Teenage Tuberculosis Patient. She joined us as our guest on Minnesota Reads. Minnesota Reads on KUMD is produced with funding provided in part by the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund.